and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters I find therein, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today, we're moving into the M section of the Monster Manual, and we got a real mix of monsters for you, including some prehistoric mammals, some classical monsters, and some of that weird Blackmoor nonsense. But before we do that, it's time to thank a new patron. I'm talking about someone who went to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's patron, you pledge at the $2 level or higher, you get access to my other show, Patron Deities, in which I do for the Deities and Demigods book what I'm currently doing for Monster Man. So thank you very much to Ben for supporting the show. I also have to make a correction to a previous episode. In an earlier episode, I thanked Roger Duthie for supporting the show. What I should have done is thank Roger Duthie for supporting the show. Thanks, Roger. Okay, let's get cracking on today's monsters. We start off with the mammoth. Y'all know what a mammoth is, like a big hairy prehistoric elephant. I say it's big, it's big, but it's sort of like African elephant big. Some of them get a little bit bigger than that, but for the most part, they're not gigantic, they're just very large. But they're cool. They got big heads with weird, bulgy skulls, and they've got long, curved tusks, and they're covered in probably really smelly hair. I would assume that if you have mammoths in your game, then a tribe of barbarians are riding them into battle. I think that's pretty much how it goes, right? They've got crude howdahs made out of mammoth bones and skins, and they're up there flinging stone-tipped javelins and smashing through the crude walls of prehistoric villages. Yeah, mammoths. Mammoths are pretty great. Mammoths take any situation that an elephant might be in, but they make it more kind of metal, basically. And I love elephants. I mean, as you will remember from the episode where we talked about elephants. So yeah, mammoths are pretty good. I mean, mammoths are one of the few of these prehistoric megafauna that really get a fair shake in the Monster Manual because, although, yeah, they're just another bunch of large herbivores, we know so much about elephants. I mean, actually, we know a good amount about mammoths, to be fair. They're one of the most intensively studied. Anyway, my point is that because we think of elephants as being these intelligent social creatures, the mammoth takes on an additional layer of both kind of sympathy and complexity, allowing us to use mammoths in a wide range of different functions. And again, the one thing you're probably not going to do is just fight some mammoths out there on the snowy steppes, because you would steer well clear of a herd of mammoths if you had the opportunity. Although, again, you could certainly have some fun in a scenario where, you know, in order to prove yourself to a tribe of primitive hunters, you had to, you know, bring down a mammoth in order to, you know, be initiated into their tribe or go get something from the sacred mammoth hunting grounds or, you know, something like that. So, I mean, there are mammoth scenario opportunities, but I think mainly tribes of hairy barbarians riding them into battle. All right, next up, we've got the manticore. Now, the manticore has a lot of the same things that I said about the lucrata, by which I mean that it is another animal that seems ultimately to come from the indica, the now-lost work by the Greek physician Ctesias, who was living in Persia. He was a court physician to the king of Persia, and he was writing down all these stories that he was being told about India and what it was like. And the description of the manticore in the Monster Manual comes more or less from the indica. Now, we don't have The complete version of that text has not survived into the present day, so instead what we have are what other writers said Ctesias said in the Indica, but the summary seems to go something like this. The Marticora is an animal found in this country. It has a face like a man's, a skin red as cinnabar, and is as large as a lion. It has three rows of teeth, ears and light blue eyes like those of a man. Its tail is like that of a land scorpion, containing a sting more than a cubit long at the end. It has other stings on each side of its tail and one on the top of its head, like the scorpion, with which it inflicts a wound that is always fatal. If it is attacked from a distance, it sets up its tail in front and discharges its stings as if from a bow. If attacked from behind, it straightens it out and launches its stings in a direct line to the distance of 100 feet. The wound inflicted is fatal to all animals except for the elephant. The stings are about a foot long and as thick as a small rush. The Marticora is called in Greek anthropophagus, that's man-eater, because although it preys upon other animals, it kills and devours a greater number of human beings. It fights with both its claws and stings, which, according to Ctesias, grow again after they have been discharged. There is a great number of these animals in India, which are hunted and killed with spears or arrows by the natives mounted on elephants. And this is a summary of what Ctesias wrote by a writer called Photius. So Here we see pretty much every aspect except one of the Monster Manual Manticore. We've got the human face, the lion-like body, the scorpion tail with stings that can be shot out. And they've combined the description of having kind of rows of stinging quills into having a bunch of quills in the tail. So sort of two aspects of the description have been merged together. The one thing that I can't find any source for that's in the Monster Manual version of the Manticore is that it has wings. Manticores don't seem to have wings in medieval heraldry, for all that I can see. So I'm not sure what's going on with that. Anyway, so as they mentioned, the name of the Manticore comes from a Persian word, Mardiakor. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, but which literally means man-eater. And then that became Marticora. And then that got transcribed as Manticora. And then later on, medieval and post-medieval writers sometimes interpreted that simply to mean man-tiger. And there's a lot of association of the manticore and the tiger, just like there is with the lucrata and the hyena. I guess sort of in the sense that it's a big cat with a sort of orangey coat, and that it is hunted in India. Other than that, it don't seem like there's a lot of difference, although the fear of man-eating tigers is certainly one that we discussed when we talked about the were-tiger. I note that they are lawful evil and of low intelligence, so there doesn't seem to be much there other than that they're kind of bizarre classical wildlife. So they seem to have a kind of, like, crude level of intelligence. They fly around to, you know, prey on humans. Yeah, I mean, they're just kind of, again, they're that exotic encounter that tells you a little bit about the kind of world that you're in. And it's nice to see a sort of fantastic wildlife monster that isn't fundamentally just kind of a bear, you know. So it has these complexities like flying and shooting its stings. So, you know, it seems all right. I sort of would have expected that the stings would be poisonous by analogy to the scorpion. But that doesn't seem to be the case in the D&D Manticore. Instead, it mentions that they're made of iron, which is a fun detail. I like the idea that here is this creature that for some reason its tail spikes are made of iron. That really adds to its fantastic description. So that's nice. Next, we have the Masher, and you can tell that I am starting to get the hang of this Monster Manual business, which is good, because we're like halfway through it. Because I looked at this thing and I went, oh, is this a Blackmoor monster? And when I looked it up, it was. Once again, we have all the traits that I want out of a Blackmoor creature. It lives in the sea, it's kind of boring, and it's not fantastic in any way. It's just a fish. But it's a fish that doesn't exist in the real world. And it just kind of grazes along reefs, defending itself if threatened with its poisonous spines. And once again, the situation where it would seem to come up is a situation where you are looking for sunken treasure. So I can only assume that the Blackmoor campaign involved a lot of diving, because otherwise it's hard to see where mashers are going to come up in your game, right? Because they're not hostile. You're not going to get attacked by mashers. You're going to have to be under the water looking for something or trying to do something, and then you have to deal with these ding-dang mashers that are in the way while the locathas come at you from above on their giant eel mounts or whatever. So I was thinking about the masher, and ultimately I have to think that there's a greater aesthetic purpose that is served by the masher, which is sort of a way of saying you are somewhere that is unfamiliar. Now, if you take a look at a lot of fantasy, it is based on a sense of familiarity. And that's a criticism that is often leveled at fantasy by people who prefer science fiction. That is, when you are in a fantasy setting, you often find yourself in a place that never was, but that is clearly a mashup and pastiche of places that were, that's intended to create a sense of familiarity, even indeed a sense of familiarity that makes the setting less weird than any of the real historical places that it is approximately derived from. So if you look at Skyrim or Westeros or, you know, to a certain extent, Middle Earth or the setting of Robert E. Howard's Conan stories, they mash up elements of different historical cultures to produce something that isn't specifically any one of them, but that the reader will, or viewer or whatever, will automatically recognize as kind of being old-timey and make certain assumptions about what that setting is like. And there are definitely people who that's what they like about fantasies, that sense of a timeless past. And we can all identify what are the features of that that would appear in a Dungeons & Dragons games, right? Like the ubiquity of taverns or the idea of the city watch. You know, those are all things that probably are rarer historically, but they're kind of cozy and comforting, and they turn up in a lot of fantasy settings. And same with having this set of encounters with animals that you might have found in the, like, ancient or medieval Northern Europe, right? So you're likely to fight wolves in a D&D game, much more so than you are likely to fight mountain lions, because mountain lions are from North America, and we all know that North America's not fantastic. Right? It's actually one of the things that stands out about Westeros is that its geography is North American, so it has redwood trees and stuff like that, and alligators. Anyway, my point is that the Masher and animals like it are there to subvert that, so that when you are, you know, diving for sunken treasure in Blackmoor, you're not just surrounded by, you know, sharks and barracudas and, I don't know, you know, jellyfish and octopodes. Octopuses, you know, all the things that you would normally expect to find in a pirate story. You're constantly being reminded that you're in a fantastic and alien landscape because of the presence of things like the Masher, even though the Masher doesn't really do anything else, right? It's just a big fish. Like, it's poisonous, but you could just kind of avoid it. So it's just there to say, even though you are not doing anything that's currently magical, this isn't your world, and it has weird wildlife that is different from the world that you come from. And I think there's a certain value in that. Now, I might be overthinking it, but if I gotta find something nice to say about the Masher, it's there to remind you that you're not in our Earth, and that monsters aren't exceptions, they're the norm. Now, that's an approach to D&D that some iterations of the game don't like to take. So, for example, if you've ever played Lamentations of the Flame Princess, it very much proceeds from the premise that monsters are unique and that they are intrusions into the seemingly normal other world, right? You might think of that as a fantasy game, but with horror monsters in it. And here, this is taking the exact opposite approach to that. And there's something to be said for it. So, okay, that's me being nicer about the Masher than I thought I was going to be. Finally, the mastodon. Now look, I realize that mastodons are different from mammoths. Yeah? Okay, I accept that. In fact, mammoths are more closely related to modern elephants than they are to mastodons. And in terms of their statistics, the mastodon and the mammoth are reasonably different, perhaps to reflect the idea that mastodons are smaller than mammoths. Although, you know, depending on the species of mammoth, that's not really true. But guys, mastodons are pretty much mammoths. They're like mammoths, but without the cool skull, and their tusks are smaller and straighter. I mean, it's fine. They've got a great name, mastodon. But other than that, I mean, pretty much mammoths. I realize that mastodons and mammoths are not the same, but everything that I said about mammoths can also equally apply to mastodons. So once again, we have this weird situation in the Monster Manual where the lion and the mountain lion, two species that just don't have anything to do with each other, in the same entry, whereas the mammoth and the mastodon, two species that, although not closely related, in many ways are going to fill the same niche in your game, have separate entries on the same page. Whatever. But mastodons are pretty cool, it's just that we already had mammoths earlier on this page. Alright, so that's it for the first page of the M section. Join me next time as we explore the fearsome Medusa and 3.5 pages of men. Men, 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 men. I might cut that bit out. Anyway, that's going to be on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.